This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go.
Here we are.
Here we go. You ready to talk about murder?
Because we are.
Because we are murderers.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, guys. Karen in Georgia. This is my favorite murder.
That's probably the most uncomfortable part for me is when we're talking not to each other, but to the audience.
Yeah.
It's very unnatural.
It's so, we're like introducing something and like clearly we haven't rehearsed this at all and have...
No, we don't have any radio experience. We're not professionals in that way. Hello, everyone.
Yeah. Word, like you say a word and then I say a word and we'll go back and forth.
My saying Menon.
Yes, exactly.
Did you say by Menon?
No. That's how good we are at this.
We don't have any kind of instinct toward what the other person's doing and we always guess wrong.
Yeah. And we talk over each other.
It's perfect.
There we are. And yet.
And yet.
We have 1,000 people in the Facebook group.
1,000.
I know, and this is episode 8.
That's a very high number.
And none of them are sexist, racist jerks yet.
I hear, now I'm not on Facebook, brag, brag, brag.
I know.
But from what I hear from Georgia, everyone is the coolest on our Facebook page.
They're all like, there's all these people that feel like they've come home and they can finally talk to someone about murder and like, cause like their husbands and siblings and everyone thinks they're fucking weirdos for being into murder. And then suddenly they found their people.
God bless you all.
Someone even said, hey, and does anyone in the New York area want to have a murder meetup? And I'm like, that's how you get murdered. Don't do that. But that's very sweet of you.
Yeah, that's easy to misinterpret for in any direction.
Yeah.
It can either be murder everybody or have a murder meetup and then just murders.
You're going to get murdered.
I would just be super clear with the wording in that meetup.
Yeah. I'd also like to say that we have... nothing to do with anyone who gets murdered because of this podcast. We reserve the right
to not be culpable.
Yep.
Into perpetuity.
Exactly.
Those are two legal words that I know.
That was legal as fuck.
It felt pretty great. We had a murder meetup today.
We totally
ate lunch before this recording.
We both had eggs.
It was pretty nice.
And talked about the Simpson show, which we're calling the Simpsons.
The new Simpsons, the people versus OJ Simpson.
And we talked about that extensively.
I feel like I could talk about it forever.
I do too. I mean, they are killing it, literally.
It's so great. It's so great. And I was telling Georgia that Patton Oswalt, everyone's favorite stand-up comedian, is now on Twitter actively praising Sarah Paulson for her performance as Marsha Clark. Nothing makes me happier.
Do you think his wife is a little bit like... get off of my fucking, this is my murder
area.
Is my thing.
Yes.
And you're kind of stepping on my toes right now. Like if she were going to become a stand-up comedian all of a sudden.
I you know what I picture? Michelle McNamara is just always in the other room with her sleeves rolled up trying to solve crime in real life. And that's why she's my hero.
She is such a badass.
She's like, you can tweet whatever you want because I'm in the real world.
That's adorable. Yeah. I'm being a fucking investigative journalist over here.
Go talk about your murder show that happened 25 years ago.
Right. That people from American Horror Story are acting out now.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Is there any little part of your brain that is like open to the idea that OJ didn't do it?
No.
Okay. Just making sure.
I understand why people think that and want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that you can beat your wife up for years and years. And I think he beat his first wife up too.
Yeah.
like you, that as a pattern and as a, you having explosive anger and violent reactions to things. Plus, as we all are starting to learn, the concussion element in football,
sure,
that lots of football players have these problems that could truly stem back to like mental issues,
rage issues.
I don't think that that just kind of stops at a certain point. Like, yeah, I don't think that's a controllable thing.
Or all of those things happen and then just some stranger comes and kills these two people that, yeah, it wouldn't make sense.
Right. And
especially with
just
all the evidence.
There would be blood evidence that would have, I honestly believe that defense team that was just going to town would have found other blood and been like, what about this guy?
Yeah.
Because that's, they were scrambling and they got him off. I mean, like,
it's incredible.
It's amazing. So if there was another person, I trust that dream team mm-hmm. would have been like, here's the person, here's their name, here's their blood. Like,
here's why we think that. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also I know there's just bias because I really love the fact that I lived through it and now I'm watching it on TV.
I know. Isn't it? It's funny when they're like, there'll be like a dramatic turn and you're like, oh, and you're like, wait, no, he still gets off. Like, yeah. you know the outcome.
We know the ending.
Yeah. But it's still a great, that's a testament to the show is that it's so good.
Yeah. And they're telling you the things you don't know about it.
Right.
Which I love.
The only part of it that I am not into is OJ Simpson. Like, what's his name?
Cuba Gooding Jr.
As OJ Simpson.
Yeah. He doesn't look right.
He doesn't. I can't picture OJ Simpson when I look at him.
Right.
For so many reasons. Someone just texted me that they saw Tracy Morgan when he talked, when Cuba Gooding Jr. talked.
Like Cuba is playing Tracy Morgan?
Who's playing OJ. Yeah.
Oh.
You know what I mean? But somewhere in there, Tracy Morgan is.
Well, very few men look like OJ Simpson. That would have been a really hard thing to cast, I think.
Yeah. I guess I wish he was bigger.
You know who should have played it?
Who?
Shamar Moore.
Who's that?
Criminal Minds.
Oh.
He used to be on a soap opera. And the reason I know him so well is because when I worked on the Ellen DeGeneres talk show, anytime there'd be somebody would drop out, like if there was an emergency, they would always call Shamar Moore because he was an amazing guest. Mm-hmm. He was usually available because he was on Criminal Minds, so he was always in town.
Yeah.
And because he was on a soap opera, he had the crazy high Q rating. So we'd get spikes in our rating.
Holy shit.
Even though he wasn't like famous, he was like beloved.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see who was on that like audition list and if Cuba Gooding Jr. just got picked because for whatever reason.
Because he is a good actor.
Yes.
And like those times where he's in jail and like,
yeah,
there's great,
he's pathetic
moments, but yeah, he just doesn't look right.
Yeah. He has this great, you feel bad for him because he clearly doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
I like that character he's playing, but it doesn't feel like OJ Simpson to me.
Right. Well, because there's too much. Yeah. He seems bewildered and confused, which might be an act that like there's a reveal later.
Right.
But it's, I believe that I want to see someone that's a little more going with the story he's being given.
Yeah.
Knowing that he has an out after having killed two people.
Yeah. Jesus.
But maybe that's just my agenda.
No. I think that's true. And I feel like that's this week in The Simpsons. Like, we open every episode now with, because it's so good. I hope everyone's watching.
Exactly. And the idea that you decided to call it The Simpsons is my favorite thing of all time.
Should we talk about our favorite murder?
Yes. So this week we were doing Strange Ways to Die.
Yeah. Originally we just shot out the idea, weird murder weapons.
Yes.
And I just like, I Googled that and it's just like really boring stories.
Lots of one-offs, which I'm not interested in. Like crimes of passion where a woman kills a man with the stiletto heel where it's like, well, yeah, but that's just crimes of passion.
Exactly. There was a good one of a guy who was like clearly grooming a 10-year-old boy to be like he's going to child molest him.
Yeah.
And the kid one day was like, fuck this, and took a pickle jar and smashed him over the head with it. But then he stabbed him to death. So it's not like the pickle jar killed him.
Right.
You know.
It just stopped him for a second.
Yeah. And that's the amount of the story. That's the story. So I would have had no story to tell.
Well, yeah, there's when it comes down to it, I was thinking, oh, I bet I could find a serial killer who killed people with like a bow and arrow or something.
Right. That's just in the movies.
But yes, exactly. When you're reverse researching stuff like that,
yeah,
just stuff comes up. I was also thinking of, there's a person I want to talk about in the future who is the Sacramento vampire killer.
Oh, right.
He's so creepy, but when he actually killed people, he just killed them with guns.
Exactly.
So it all boils down to boring weapons.
Listen, if you're a killer out there, you got to get a little more creative if you want to make it onto this show.
Yeah. How about you do one of those, like in, do you know what I'm talking
about?
In the Line of Fire, John.
Oh, no, I always do that when I think I know the end of a story.
Yes. John Malkovich makes a gun out of wood so that he gets the metal detector and he can kill the president.
Like really makes a gun?
Yes.
That's cool. No, I was going to say one where I can't remember. He kills people with the cow air gun.
Yes. Oh, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men. Thank you.
The best.
That's, yeah, something like that. Someone needs to not do to us.
That movie is so fucking perfect.
Ugh, I have seen that so many times. It's gorgeous. And I don't like movies. Gorgeous.
And the idea that you would kill someone that way.
Yeah.
Is so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. And it's like not necessary. Because guns. Yeah.
All right. Do you want me to go first since you went first last time?
Sure. But what if we have the same one?
Well, I would be shocked because here's what I did.
Okay. Wait, so the topic is now weird ways people have been killed or died.
Yes.
Okay.
So here's how I'll just take you down my thought process murder journey.
Love
on this week. So last week when we were talking about O.J. Simpson, we started talking about Dominic Dunn.
Right, which I fucked up and said she got killed the wrong
way.
We
both did because I immediately agreed with you. But okay. Here's the thing. So we once talked about this. We were going to have a correction section when we go through because a bunch of people tweeted at us to say Dominic Dunn was killed by her ex-boyfriend who was stalking her, but she wasn't killed by a fan. You are thinking of Rebecca Schaefer from My Sister Sam.
That's exactly true.
It's what but I thought of the exact same thing and I was right there with you now. So I went to look it up to be like, okay, here's going to be our correction. Well, it turns out that they were very, very similar murders. They were both actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Dominique Dunn was 22. Rebecca Schaefer was 21.
Oh my God.
Both murdered at their homes. Dominique Dunn was murdered by her ex-boyfriend who was stalking her and who she was trying to be like reasonable with. And she actually, the creepy thing to me about her murder is that she was doing everything she could to like stay safe. And there was a guy, she had her friend over watching TV with her when the ex-boyfriend showed up wanting to quote unquote talk to her and made her come out on the porch. And so the guy was like waiting inside thinking everything was fine.
Yeah, because they're outside.
They're outside talking. Then he doesn't see them. Then he goes out around back to see if they went into the backyard. Finally comes around front and sees the ex-boyfriend standing over her. He has strangled her to death.
How do you know if someone's going to be like a stalker light or is a murderer?
I mean, I think the lesson we're slowly learning is that, like, if you have an abusive boyfriend, you have to break up with him and not get back together with him. Not like you have to cut him out of your life
completely
because that's the mistake. I mean, not to say that she made a mistake, but she did get back together with him once. And
you give him the idea and an opening to be back, to think that he's back in your life and has a way to do it, and he's just
that he can convince you,
and he doesn't stop, which is clearly not the woman's fault.
No.
But we need to be able to not let them come back in our lives at all.
Well, and in both of these cases, it's that thing of women being polite.
Oh,
it's
my God.
It's women thinking they're afraid to be a bitch or they're afraid to make a strong stand.
Mm-hmm.
So in Rebecca Schaefer's case, it was a stalker who'd been stalking her for 3 years and who ended up hiring a private investigator to find her home address. And so that was actually after her murder, between that and the Teresa Saldana attack, which she didn't die. That was the woman who's the co-star of Raging Bull, who ended up getting attacked by her stalker. That's both of those. It ended up changing. They created the first anti-stalking law in California in 1990, I believe, because of those two things.
That's amazing.
But those two things were totally parallel. They were just 7 years apart, but they were almost exactly the same. So we both made the exact same mistake. That's weird. And so I wanted to like look into it. And that brought me down the road because Dominique Dunn is most famous for being a part of movie cursed movies.
Is she Poltergeist?
Yes.
Oh.
She was the teenage sister in Poltergeist.
Fuck, when she flips off the fucking construction workers in her backyard.
Yep.
And I was a kid, I was like, I want to be like that when I grow up.
Yes. And both of those girls were very like, there were girls that when you watch them on TV or in movies, you're like, I know that girl.
Yeah.
Like total girl next door girls.
Yeah.
So I went into cursed movie thing. So that's my thing.
That's not what I did. That's badass.
Okay. So Poltergeist, the trilogy of movies, they've had all these deaths and tragedies associated with the movie.
Love this shit.
So I'm just going to walk you on through. And then I have two other ones.
Okay.
They get shorter as they go.
No, I dig it.
But we start with Poltergeist. So Dominique Dunn was murdered 5 months after the release of Poltergeist 1, the original Poltergeist.
Okay.
And then Poltergeist 2, Julian Beck was the guy that played Kane, that super creepy preacher.
Uh-huh.
And he died of stomach cancer at age 60.
Oh.
Right after that movie came out.
After
that was in
two.
1983. That okay. was Poltergeist 2.
That came out in 83?
Yeah.
How did I watch that? Okay.
What do you mean?
Because I just remember, I feel like I remember seeing it in the theater, but I must not have, because I was, that's too young for me to have
seen.
You
would have been too young?
Yeah.
Well, there was three of them. You
yeah.
You would have seen part three where they were in the apartment building.
No, maybe maybe we got it on VHS.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go on.
Then in 1987, Will Sampson, who played in Poltergeist 2, played Taylor, the medicine man, the mm-hmm. Who was the big silent Indian in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah. He died of scleroderma, which is a degenerative, a chronic degenerative condition. That basically he ended up like having kidney failure and all this stuff. So he died
Dude.
And he was only 53.
Oh, man, there's just like so many ways you can die. Like if you want to think about it a lot, there's all these things.
If it's not murder, then it could be a disease. It could be some weird gene just clicks on.
It's not could have, it's gonna.
Well, yeah,
there's gonna be something.
That's really what it is.
Oh, God.
We're all ticking time bombs.
Okay, go on.
Then the one that got this idea of this movie is cursed going is Heather O'Rourke, because she died when she was 12 years old. It was 1987, the same year as Will Sampson. And it was before the release. And some people say before the ending of the shooting of Poltergeist 3.
So she was the little girl, but she's like the main character in Poltergeist. She's in
yeah.
the middle of shooting.
Carol Ann.
Yeah.
Carol Ann
walked towards the light. She's in halfway through shooting the third one.
Yes.
Okay.
I think more than halfway through,
okay.
But some people say they can't get it confirmed that there's a body double for the rest of
Whoa.
The shooting because she died. And it was, they had diagnosed her as having Crohn's disease, but what she actually really had was a bowel obstruction. So she got the flu, went into septic shock. And then cardiac arrest. They rush her to, I think it was Cedars-Sinai.
Holy shit.
And she died on the operating table.
So that's like a simple thing that could have been fixed.
Yes. And she was just misdiagnosed. And she was only 12. So that's when everyone started freaking out that there's something wrong with this.
Yeah.
Like
cursed.
This whole movie is cursed.
Yeah.
Then a guy named Lou Perryman, who played a small part in the first Poltergeist, Pugsley, he was in 2009. He was murdered by an axe wielding ex-con who broke into his apartment.
Oh my God.
Just flat out horribly murdered.
Why him specifically, or it just happened that way?
They think it was just somebody trying to rob him, but he, like, the guy had an axe and then just ended up killing him.
Or it was a cursed
movie. Because he was at home. Or it was a cursed movie and it was just a man possessed by a demon.
That's crazy. Okay.
Then Richard Lawson, who played the parapsychologist Ryan in the original.
I liked him.
He's been in, when I looked on his Wikipedia page, it just went on and on. He has been in a million things and he still is, like, up until like 2016, like release pending. Like he's been in
wow.
everything.
Yeah.
And he was in a commercial airline crash where there were 51 people, passengers on the plane, 27 of them died and he walked away. So more than half the people on the plane died and miraculously he walked away. So
Fuck.
That kind of is like, you know, it's, you know, say a tragedy associated,
sure.
but it almost is kind of like, well, that
it's a freak accident.
It's a freak accident that he didn't die in.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, well, maybe he ended the curse.
If I were him, I would never leave the house.
Well, but or would it be that thing where I survived a fucking plane crash that other people didn't?
That's true.
I'm invincible or whatever.
That's true.
But also turned out, and Jo Beth Williams talked about this in an interview she did once, that she found out after, so you know that huge crazy scene at the end where they fall into the pool and there's all the skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
Those were real human skeletons that they used.
Why?
Because apparently a rubber skeleton remake is more expensive than just using real ones.
Who gave them skeletons?
So they probably bought them from prop house or whatever. But a lot of people think that that has something to do with it. But then also, they say that the remake that they just came out with, my boyfriend Sam Rockwell, that they shot it on a house that had a big field behind it, so they could kind of like recreate all that stuff. And apparently, they couldn't get any of the electronic stuff to work in this field. They were using drones to shoot overhead shots, and the drones wouldn't work. They wouldn't register the field.
Oh my God, I'm getting chills.
Yeah, so there was a thing where there was all kinds of problems and weird shit going on on that set too.
Oh my God, I'm like gonna throw up right now.
Well, then that brought me around. That brought me to a Cracked article, which if you don't go on to cracked.com, you're crazy.
Oh my God.
It's the best website. It gives you listicles, but they're written so hilariously.
So well.
And it's like BuzzFeed for smart, funny people.
Yeah, and it's like the topics they do are just absolutely incredible. Like the 10 scariest mysteries that cannot be explained. Or like, ugh, I love Cracked.
Or like 10 YouTube videos that are actually what they say they are. Like truly scary and crazy.
Right.
Yeah, Cracked is amazing. So that led me to this list. And they had, it was like 6 cursed movie sets, but I only did, because the next one that turned me on to was The Exorcist.
Oh, shit.
Which it makes, you know, you're like, oh, it makes sense that this is cursed.
Yeah, it's not like My Fair Lady was cursed. It's like fucked up movies, like The Exorcist.
And this one's crazy.
Oh my God, I want to hear it. I don't know this.
Exorcist was shot in 1973, or came out in 1973. It was shot the year before.
Okay.
The first, I'll just start here. The shooting was delayed after the set caught fire. So there's a set of their house. If you've seen the movie, if you haven't seen the movie, you have to. It's the scariest movie. It's so 70s and it's so like, it's not scary because things are popping out. You. Like it gets scary obviously later when she's possessed. But in the beginning, it's just all tone and feel where it's, you're just like, this
lighting,
is horrifying.
Lighting and music and tone.
And
it's like
when they bring Reagan to the hospital to see what's wrong with her, there's a part where she's in like this MRI machine thing that is one of the scariest things. And it's just medical equipment.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing actually happening, but it's like, you know, they just did it perfectly.
You know, man, they don't need drones to make a fucking movie cool anymore.
Right.
I mean, back
so
then.
This set caught on fire.
Oh my God.
For no reason. The only thing that they can figure out was they thought maybe a pigeon landed in like the breaker boxes, like the electrical boxes.
Oh my God.
But other than that, they couldn't figure out a reason why it would catch on fire. And the only room that didn't burn was Reagan's room, which is where all the possession demonic shit takes place at the end of the movie.
I'd quit the movie at that point.
It didn't burn. Everything else in the house burned,
That's
which is insane.
Terrifying.
So shooting was delayed because of that.
Okay.
Then, and I read a couple different versions of this story, but the one that seemed the most consistent was that it happened to Ellen Burstyn.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a scene where when Reagan is totally possessed, she throws her mother against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, she gets thrown against the wall, falls down, and there's this blood-curdling scream. Well, it's because Ellen Burstyn, the way it happened, she like broke her spine, and the scream is real.
Oh, I feel like there's like a scene in Jaws too. I feel like in the 70s and 80s they were like, let's just use it. We like didn't do that right.
Yes,
and the person
exactly.
is screaming because they're in pain.
Exactly. And it's like, what better kind of blood curdling scream as opposed to like somebody standing in a recording booth like screaming? It's
when they're
real
like,
scream of her spine breaking.
And they're like, it's realistic because it's real.
Because it happened.
My God, that's awful.
And also, this was one of the first movies that ever used subliminal recordings.
That's fucking awesome.
Part of the other reason that it's such a freaky movie is because subliminally they're playing tapes of bees of swarms of bees, buzzing bees, and lions growling like before they eat something.
So like in your brain, in your old brain, you like understand.
You can hear these like emergency, get out. So but it's like in the lead up parts.
I love that it's not even like subliminally like a baby crying or like subliminally someone getting stabbed. It's like subliminally shit that way back when we were fucking animals.
Yes.
We needed to be afraid of.
Run away. There's bees.
Yeah. So, love it.
And also there's that part where when Karis sees his mother coming up out of the subway,
mm-hmm.
It's that part where she had died and he didn't see her and he has all this guilt and he keeps dreaming about her mm-hmm. coming and like crying for him across the street or mm-hmm. whatever. In that scene, and I've actually watched it and paused it, they just flick in for half a second this horrifying face.
No.
Yeah, and you can look it up online. It's great. It's like, it looks like a really white face with dark black circles underneath and red in the eyes and red in the mouth. It's horrifying.
I want to start crying right now.
It's crazy creepy. Okay, so. Then let's see. Oh, so the actor who played the director. So the plot of the movie is that Ellen Burstyn's an actress and she's in this movie. And so all the shit starts happening while she's in this movie and she has to quit the movie. Whatever. Right. Well, the director of the movie is played by an actor named Jack McGowan, who died days after completing his scenes of the flu.
What?
And he was 54.
What
so
the fuck?
Just kind of strangely, randomly, just dies of the flu.
What is this fucking?
Then
black?
The woman who plays Karis's mother, who is in that thing of like, she's an 89-year-old Greek woman who literally got cast like I think out of a restaurant, restaurant or something. She died of natural causes, like days after Jack McGowan died.
Wow.
They died within like 6 days of each other, and they're the two characters in the movie who die.
Oh god.
So then there's these are the other like tragedies and deaths.
Okay.
Linda Blair's grandfather died while shooting. Max von Sydow's brother died on the first day he started shooting.
Holy shit.
And he plays the old priest that comes to help Father Karis. Jason Miller, who plays Father Karis, his son was hit and almost killed by a motorcycle during shooting.
Jesus fucking...
Mercedes McCambridge, I think that's how you pronounce her last name, did the voice of the demon when Linda Blair is, you know, possessed.
Yeah.
In 1987, her son murdered his wife and children and then killed himself.
Whoa.
Which is, you know, 10, 15 years after all of it.
Yeah.
It's still like, it's just the curse thing where it's like, how many movies can you say have this many like
a crazy
tragedies and hideous things happen? And this is the best. At the premiere in Rome, they're at this theater and across the street is a 16th century church.
Uh-huh.
And as the people are filing in to the movie premiere, a rainstorm and lightning storm starts going.
No.
Everyone's in the theater and before the movie starts, they hear this crazy noise outside. Lightning had struck the cross on top of this church that had been there for 400 years, and this 8-foot cross falls off the church and into the plaza across
from the theater. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's not God being like, nope.
Yeah. Or the devil being like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you try to fight me? So the last one is Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, I knew it because I was going to say it sounds like the plot of Rosemary's Baby, which is that, like, you know, the actor gets stricken with blindness to get the role. Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And this is, if you look it up, and you can find plenty of websites because there's a bunch of other ones. And there's a really good one, but it's not even cursed. It's just there's that movie, I think it's Genghis Khan. I don't remember what the title is, but it's the John Wayne movie where they ended up shot 5 miles downwind from where they were testing A-bombs in the desert. So everyone got cancer.
Yeah.
Every fucking buddy got cancer. And they took dirt from the set where they shot like on a location.
And tested it.
And then they took it back and used it in the studio set. So like everybody got cancer.
Oh my fucking, I love shit like that. Yes. So, I mean, it's
so terrible. It's just like the worst mistake anyone's ever made.
Yeah, like that is the most toxic dirt
Yeah, you don't want
I thought you were going to say they tested it and they found that it was... Nope, they used it. Nope, they brought it back and used it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, and also the female lead in that movie was attacked by a Black Panther.
Sure.
The real animal.
Yeah.
Not a political activist.
I figured you wouldn't... I figured something would be different in that saying. Yeah. Yeah.
A real got attacked by a panther. And that, the funniest thing to me was that was like a one line thing. Where yeah. I'm like, I would like to know more about this.
Like, where was she? What happened?
What
had the Black Panther had for breakfast? Like, yeah. I want to know everything.
So insane. Yeah. So on Rosemary's Baby, and this is a short one, but just the man who was the composer died of a brain clot a year after filming, which is the same way a character in the movie dies.
Didn't he die that way? In the movie?
Yes.
Oh, the composer of
real composer of the movie in real life died of a brain clot the way the guy in the movie died.
Holy shit.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, we all know Roman Polanski, who bought the house from Terry Melcher, who was a music producer who would not record Charles Manson's music. And so Charles Manson sent his death hippies up to murder everybody, thinking he was going to kill Terry Melcher. And he ended up killing Roman Polanski's wife, Sharon Tate, her unborn baby, and four other people, Jay Sebring, famous hairdresser.
Yeah.
And Polanski was in London at the time, so he just by chance missed that.
I didn't realize that there was a reason they went to that house.
Yeah.
I thought they just went there because, wasn't it the heir to the coffee fortune that lived there? Folgers.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was Roman Polanski's house though, I think.
Yeah.
She was there.
But I thought they went there to like, because it was rich people. I didn't realize they went there because Manson was like, you wouldn't, this is how he talks. You wouldn't record my music.
Hey man. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
He
had a reason, but then once they were there, they didn't care. Yeah. They were just like, we're killing all these people.
Right.
But here's what I find interesting about that is that they called the Manson family called that Helter Skelter, that murder spree, which of course was a Beatles song. And then in 1980, John Lennon was shot in front of the Dakota, the same apartment building used as the exterior of the apartment building for Rosemary's Baby.
No.
The end of my thing.
I'm just going to kick my glass of water over right now because I can't even handle any of this. I just want to kick it.
There's so many good things like that, but I kind of went way off our theme.
No, but there was a line, it was a linear narrative that started with a murder.
Yes.
That we had talked about before.
Exactly.
So I deemed that okay.
Thank you, good. And also, it makes me just want to say, we love it when you tell us if we make mistakes.
Yeah.
Because this conversation can be so dense
of
shit we're talking about sometimes that obviously I definitely make those mistakes all the time. We want to hear it if you're like, oh, wait, no, that's not right.
And Karen and I really only research the ones we're going to talk about. So if we're just randomly going off on a tangent about something else, we're not going to be looking it up in the moment.
Yes.
It's called research and we're not doing it. So
we want you to definitely help us and add because once I saw a couple people be like, I remember very specifically when she was murdered and stuff. So then I was like, oh yeah, we should tell that story accurately.
Yeah.
That then led me down that path.
Just don't be mean about it because we have very fragile self-esteem and we will just fall apart if you're mean.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all made in.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Goodbye. Hey, Karen, you know that feeling when you're stressed out and your heart starts to pound and your mind is racing?
I do. I know it well.
Well, while there's no cure for stress, therapy can help shape your response to it. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, there's no better time to try Talkspace.
When you sign up for Talkspace, you'll receive a personalized match with a therapist or psychologist, typically within 48 hours.
Forbes rates Talkspace as the number one online therapy platform, plus their licensed professionals are in network with almost all major insurance companies.
Once you meet your therapy goals, or if you want to cancel for any reason, Talkspace will provide you with a prorated refund for unused time. I feel like these days people understand the importance of therapy, but the difficult part is just taking that first step. It took me months to make my first therapy appointment. I was so scared. I had a lot of ideas in my head about it. And that's why I think Talkspace is such a good idea, because making it so approachable will just get you there sooner. Then you can actually get in there, figure out what you need, talk to an actual professional, and be on your way to solving some stuff that you might want to solve.
To celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering our listeners $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80.
Go to Talkspace.com/MFM and use promo code SPACE80.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/MFM and enter promo code SPACE80 and get $80 off your first month and show your support for our show.
That's Talkspace.com/MFM. Enter promo code SPACE80.
Goodbye.
So this is the murder of Rebecca Zahu. Zahau. I'm going to say.
What's the spelling?
Z-A-H-A-U.
Yeah, Zahau. I'd say.
Rebecca Zahau. And it's also called the Coronado House Murder. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Okay, I'm going to start from the very beginning. I'm going to start from
the house murder.
Yeah, this one's fucked up. This one I think I followed it as it was happening, because this is what happens first. The morning of July 11th, 2001, 6-year-old Max Shacknow, 6 years old, takes a fatal fall from the staircase banister in his historic San Diego mansion called Spreckles Beach House in Coronado, California, in San Diego. His father is a pharmaceutical CEO named Jonah Shacknow, and the 911 call comes in from Jonah's 32-year-old live-in girlfriend, Rebecca Zahau, 32 years old, Burmese. She's a live-in. She lives there. She calls 911 to say that Max was running down the hallway above the lobby-like entrance to the house when he went over the banister. He suffered spinal cord injuries and head trauma and was in a coma. Ultimately, he dies 10 days later from swelling and cardiac arrest, and the medical examiner determined that the cause of death was accidental. And if you go online, there's actually this drawing of how he must have fallen, and it's like, it's, you know, like a mansion, spiral staircase, fucking lots of, marble and wood. And he went over the side. Yeah. Okay.
Accidental.
Okay. Well, while he's in a coma, Rebecca goes to pick up Shacknow's brother, Adam, at the airport, who's there to sit by his nephew's bedside. He flies in from Memphis, and Adam, who's the CEO's brother, is staying in the house in the back house while he's there. And that night there was reports of really loud music coming from the house that night, and while Jonah, the father, is supposedly keeping a vigil at Max's bedside with Max's mom Dina Romano and her sister Nina.
Uh-huh.
Adam is staying at the house, and Rebecca is as well. Okay, cut to the next morning.
Tension.
Yeah. So the next morning at like 6:45 a.m., Adam finds Rebecca's body. She's nude, hanging by her neck from an outdoor back balcony. Her wrists and ankles are bound. And she's gagged with a blue long sleeve t-shirt wrapped around her head with the sleeves double knotted and stuffed into her mouth. There's like a residue on her legs, it looks to be like tape residue, and she's bound, she's hanging by her neck. And her, let's see, on the bedroom door where she had jumped out of, supposedly, because here's the thing, the coroner ruled this a fucking suicide.
What?
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, this is the murder. I really think that Max, it was accidental. And then
this was vengeance.
This might have been vengeance.
Fuck.
A suicide. And on the bedroom door, someone had written in black paint, "She saved him. You can save her. Or can you save her? She saved him. Can you save her?" No, what does that mean? Nobody knows. There were 4 instances of head trauma, but ultimately she died from hanging. So he deemed it a suicide. And in addressing the blood on her legs, because there was also blood on her legs, the forensic pathologist identified the cause as either a menstrual period or a intrauterine device, which is like the most insulting. But that's also, yeah.
I mean, what are the odds?
Yeah, right.
Right? Although, you know, if it's a really bad period, you might just want to kill yourself. Sorry. It's terrible.
Yeah, or if you're raped.
I'm like baffled right now.
Yeah, this is a baffling case, okay. Which is why I love it so much.
Okay.
And I remember the kid, I remember the news report of the kid falling, and then 2 days later, this woman. So Dr. Maurice Godwin, a private forensic consultant, told a reporter that Zahau's death had all the earmarks of a, quote, ritualistic killing. And that the suicide had been staged. Duh, she's fucking bound and gagged. In Dr. Godwin's opinion, someone had dazed Zahau with a blow to the head and then tossed her off the balcony. So, and of course, remember I said that the neighbors had heard loud music coming from the house that night. So yeah. Maybe covering up
screams,
which the neighbor also heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that night, the night that she died, at 10:48 p.m., Zahau received a text message from Nina Romano, the sister of the mother of Max. And Nina stated that she wanted to stop by the house and speak with Zahau about Max's accident. And Zahau didn't reply to that message, but police said that she checked her voicemail a few hours later and listened to a message, deleted it, or it got deleted somehow, and we have no idea what was on that message. So according...
Of all the things they can do, why can't they find deleted messages?
It seems like a simple... You can find a deleted email.
Right. This is like the making of a murderer thing.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which part? Like, why didn't they find out what was on... And those kids deleted... The brother,
yes,
and the ex-boyfriend deleted...
They broke into her voicemail and then deleted stuff. And they're like, oh, well, I guess it's gone forever. Where it's like, how is that possible?
It's impossible. Especially if someone is missing, you're not going to... Everything could be a clue. Why would, you know, to find this, your missing loved one, unless you know what's going on and
right.
You deleted it on purpose.
Right.
Yeah, totally. But everyone's not a true crime fanatic like we are, though, too. So according to a, forensic analysis, the forensic expert, the note what was written on the door was written by a right-handed male, and based on how high the door was, the person was probably 6 feet tall. Rebecca was only 5'3", and Adam, the brother, was the only man in the mansion at the time of Rebecca's death.
And how tall is he?
Probably 6 feet tall.
Oh, shit.
You know? So, according to the Generation Y podcast, which they did this on the subject, he had also spent the night, you know, in that back house, specifically looking at Asian bondage porn on his phone, which he had admitted to.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And she was Burmese.
Yeah.
Beautiful, by the way.
I'm sure.
I mean, it goes without saying, but gorgeous woman. So here's some stuff from Reddit. So the Zahau family is suing over a wrongful death.
Because that's the official report. Like, she committed suicide. The end.
They've tried to reopen it and have them put a different, both deaths they have tried to get a different, cause of death.
Like ruling. Yeah.
Yeah. And neither of them it's happened.
Okay.
So they're suing over wrongful death. And so here's some of the stuff from the lawsuit. The clothes she'd been wearing before being stripped and killed were never found.
Oh,
which is like, if you're going to kill yourself, and why would you strip naked to kill yourself? That's
for real.
And then hang yourself in view of your neighbors. which there's photos. You can see photos of her body on the front lawn after this guy, Adam, supposedly cut her down before he called 911.
Oh, no.
Which, why would you fucking do that?
Also, why would you bind your own legs and arms before you hang yourself?
Yeah, well, they said that it's been done before. It's not out of the question. They had a reenactment to see if that's something they could do. And technically, yeah, you can do it.
It can be done.
They had a woman bind herself, do all of these things, and hang herself. But why it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Unless she was like into that specific kind of bondage and this was some kind of like,
yeah,
here's my thing and now I'm on my way out.
Well, maybe it was, maybe it's like, here's my thing and it was accidental. Maybe she was trying to set up her ex, her boyfriend or the brother. But why would she kill herself to begin with?
Because ultimately she's in question for this child's death.
Right.
So why would she be suddenly trying to set other people up for murder?
Totally.
Like, doesn't she have hideous guilt? A 6-year-old died.
Yeah. And she was
in a coma.
She was supposed to be watching him for sure. So she probably does feel a lot of guilt over it. And it sounds like the mom and the sister were kind of crazy and like hounding her about it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No one believed it was an accident.
But then, so then you strip down, bind yourself. And
so then you take a handful of pills and you're dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And also, I feel like she was also a Christian, which doesn't mean that she wouldn't kill herself, but it also, there's some sort of shame there that you wouldn't be naked in front of everyone. I feel like there's kind of a bit of a, what's the word?
Well,
you know, not being a naked person.
You mean like body shame or like?
No, just being demure, a little more demure.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, because then it makes it about a whole different thing.
It's perverted all of a sudden.
Yeah. If you're killing yourself because you're so sorry.
Yeah.
Then you wouldn't be naked and bound in a sexual manner.
And
it seems like.
There's four blunt force wounds to her head, which they argued on her way down, she hit her head on the wall, which is like
post-mortem?
Right as she's dying, as she's hanging herself.
Oh.
Her body flings into the wall four times. And hard enough to give her blunt force trauma. That's not going to happen. So the ties that bound her were nautical ties. And Adam, the brother, in the lawsuit, it says he's referred to as being a sailor.
Oh.
This is all from Reddit, so I didn't read this directly from the case. And the ties binding her are the same paint from the message on the door, as did her nipples.
Oh.
The black paint. Okay. So the other thing is if she had to jump out of the window with her full force, the bed that she had tied the rope to should have moved.
Yeah.
And it didn't move enough. Which means either someone was sitting on the bed, holding it in place. Someone moved the bed back to where it should have been. For some reason, if she had actually jumped, it would have been heavier. She had mud on her feet, but there were no footprints on the balcony.
Mm.
Why did she have mud on her feet? That means she was outside and the back house.
Running barefoot.
Right. But no fucking... So someone clearly picked her up and threw her over the side of the balcony if there was no footprints on the balcony. And then there was a computer in her room that was used after 3 a.m., which was later than the time she would have already been dead. And no determination was ever made as to who accessed it. So a lot of people are saying that this is like, you know, a wealthy man. They want to bury this. They don't want to bring this to trial. The cops are corrupt. It's a really wealthy neighborhood in San Diego. They determine that her death is a suicide.
And they're like, and this is now this is done.
And
like,
yeah,
no one else asks any questions.
And not only that, but they keep going. Like when there's questions about how on earth could this have happened? Why would this have happened? Instead of saying like, well, we need to look into that more because that doesn't make any sense as to a suicide. They like give insane excuses as to like, you know, well, people have killed themselves that way in the past, or see, like this woman was able to do it in a recreation. So it must be how it happened. And you know, no DNA means, and if she was hit over the head, she maybe was stunted and there's no DNA because there was no fighting between them. She never, there's no defensive wounds because she was immediately rendered unconscious.
Yeah.
You know,
and then tied up.
And then tied the fuck up.
Also, how do you bind yourself? So say, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Like she bound herself crazily
yeah.
before she threw herself over. So then you're legs and arms are bound, and then you still have to jump and get over the balcony.
Yeah.
Or whatever that thing is that she went over. But then paint's a thing. If the paint is on her when she's bound and on the ropes and on her nipples, then she must have done that after she painted the message.
Right.
Bound, painted a message at 5'3" that's up really high. Mm-hmm.
That's not really a suicide note.
No.
That no one really can understand what it means. So they're saying that people have bound themselves like that in the past when they commit suicide. But, oh my God, I can't remember what I was going to say.
First of all, how many?
Yeah.
Like one?
Right.
That's crazy.
Right. Yeah.
One person who's probably very interested in that kind of bondage.
Yeah, or it was like a sexual thing gone wrong.
Yeah, or gave them, pleasure, relief, something. They were connected in some way.
Isn't that insane?
And that's it.
Yeah, and that was 2 days after the kid went over the railing.
Well, also, the kid going over the railing, like, in just picturing it in my mind, knowing nothing about the actual setup. Mm-hmm. When you're six, how tall are you? Four feet tall at the most? And
so you're not buying it. They say, like, well, he must have tripped. That is shady, too. And they're saying that later, one of the coroners said that it looked like he had been not choked, but that someone had maybe like tried to stifle his mouth so he wasn't yelling or something like that. So there could be total foul play going on there too.
Yeah. That makes the most sense to me, is like some kind of killing of that child, whether it was accidental or not or whatever. And then they come back like 10 times harder of like, you did this.
Yeah. So even if that wasn't true, that it was accidental, they still would come back that way and they would believe it, because this is the new, young, pretty girlfriend that this kid is living with, dies under her fucking
supervision.
And so of course they're pissed and going to come after her.
Yes. She's the ultimate villain.
Yeah.
Also, she had to go get, like, in that, before she was murdered, after the kid's in the hospital, the brother comes into town and she's the one that's got to go pick him up.
She goes and gets him and then they go have dinner. Which I want to be like, well, who the fuck is having dinner when this kid's in the hospital? But then, I mean, it's true. Who the fuck is having dinner? I want to know where they had dinner. But I've been at a bedside of someone dying and you, like, you have to eat. So you all go sit at this place and have a quiet, uncomfortable, sad dinner. Like that happens.
It does happen.
It's not like they went to fucking Chili's. Like, who knows?
But I was babysitting a kid, a 6-year-old, who then basically died mm-hmm. under my care. Mm-hmm. I'm not driving to the airport. Most people won't drive to the airport anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not driving to the airport. I'm not going out to dinner.
No.
Like, I would probably be on so many pills, I would be in bed permanently.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
you're not wanted at the hospital because the mother is there and she fucking hates your guts.
And the family hates your guts, probably anyway.
Take a fucking cab from the airport.
Take a cab or some other relative.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Her sister was in town at the moment. And so she had to take her sister to the airport, which still, take a cab to the fucking airport.
Why is she running errands for people? She must be in, like, okay, say she's a sociopath and she killed a child.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me, to be like, sure, I'll be there at 8 to pick you up.
Or she's in shock and she's doing everything she can to be helpful because she just is like, let me do what I can.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe not.
Fuck.
I know. So it's just baffling, and it's really frustrating that nobody seems to want to test for anything.
Well, and if it's like pharmaceutical money, that's like the most money,
that's
right?
All CEO of a pharmaceutical company, that's all of the money in the world.
That's all the money. And then he's like basically going around. It's a Coronado.
Yeah.
Crazy rich part of San Diego. Is that right? So then it's just like, those people already know those people.
He probably gives to the community
to
begin with.
So they're just like, I've had a tragedy. Now she killed herself. Can we just lay all this to rest?
Yeah.
Is probably the storyline, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like no one's going to come back. This is a tragedy all around. Let's just let it rest.
And her poor, like, is she like a first generation Burmese?
Yeah.
So her poor parents are just like, can we get a little something? And everyone's like, nope.
And everyone's saying, you know, the family's saying that's not her handwriting. She was not suicidal. Her sister spoke to her that evening, not suicidal at all. Everyone's saying she wasn't suicidal.
Oh, that is sinister.
Yeah. And even her ex-husband, who you would think would hate her because she actually cheated on him with her new boyfriend, is like trying to figure out what's happened to her. He's not even like vengeful in any way. I know.
I want to know more about that brother. Like, what's his deal?
Yeah. No, there's no information about what he does for a living, who he is. He's from, I believe, Memphis. Yeah, he's from Memphis.
And it's kind of like, I think we all know people who have like, the type of person who has a insanely rich older brother.
Yeah.
That's like, well, now I get to do what I want.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe. For all of my life.
He cut her down at 6:48 a.m. and then sent a text message to his brother to inform him of the news. I would love to read that text message.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, your girlfriend's dead.
You text someone to say your wife is dead?
Or girlfriend? You call.
You call at minimum, if not drive down to the hospital. What?
Yeah.
Is happening.
This brother is sinister. I'm curious about it, about the dad, the boyfriend, if he had anything to do with it. Apparently he was sleeping at the Ronald McDonald House that night because he was, you know, by his kid's bedside the whole time, needed to sleep a little bit, which is what the Ronald McDonald House is for.
Oh.
And so he wasn't even near the house.
And then the ex-wife was also at the hospital, but her sister was at the house?
The ex-wife was at the hospital with the sister.
Oh.
There's, you know, the speculation is that they came over, were banging on the door to be let in. Rebecca wouldn't let them in. The message that was deleted might have been from Jonah saying, let them in.
Oh, yeah.
That was deleted.
Right.
So if they had that message saying, let them in, then they have proof that the women were there. But there's no proof that they were there. I know. How fucking crazy is it?
Well, there's no proof that they were there, but no one's looked for proof. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
He looked to prove a suicide.
It sounds to me like there's no proof that the women were involved. It sounds correct. I think that this guy, the brother, is clearly, was it sexually motivated? It had nothing to do with Max. And maybe she rebuffed his advances and he got angry and killed her.
Man.
And made it look like it was revenge.
There's a lot of motives there.
And
none of them are being explored.
No. And then, you know, it's one of those things where, like, in your head, it's like, oh, she was so pretty and they were rich and blah, blah, blah. And then you look at the photos and this kid is like a sweet little kid. This photo of this kid, Max, who dies. Yeah. It's like the same thing with JonBenet, when you're like, she was a beauty. You see all these beauty pageant photos and then you see a photo of her like a normal person. You're like, oh, I was such a young person. It was a baby.
Well, and also when children die, people very justifiably go insane. It makes sense. Like any reaction, the idea that the cops aren't going, look, there's a massive loss here.
Yeah.
The reaction off of this loss is understandable, not justified, not, you know, good or anything,
but going crazy. Like,
it's very clear motive. It's very logical motive.
Yeah. Yeah. And hearing, which they hadn't even heard yet, it was accidental. They hadn't been told that yet because that wasn't until after he died that got ruled. The women and everyone else are probably like, this woman is responsible. How the fuck did this happen? You should have been watching him. She said she was in the bathroom when it happened.
Ooh.
She's like, you should be able to leave a 6-year-old alone long enough for them not to do certain things. They say like he tripped over the dog or he was riding a scooter. Weird shit.
I don't know.
You don't buy that either.
I know I'm picturing it inaccurately because I don't know the truth. Yeah. But I'm like, when you trip and fall, you're six, you're tripping what? At the most, 2 inches.
Yeah. Or, you're not,
you know,
flying.
You don't catch fucking air and go over the side of a railing.
Totally. But if you're a little, you know, you're playing around in a way you shouldn't be, and you're messing around, and you're trying to climb over the railing even.
Yes.
Because you do stupid shit. Did you ever get your head caught between the banister, the railing? And I did. It was the most terrifying. I still remember it.
I mean, yeah, there's... But then I go, how long was she in that bathroom that he's doing so much stuff? Like,
it could have been a minute.
But when you're babysitting, it makes me think of Nora, of course, my niece, mm-hmm. who's now 9, but I babysat her a ton when it was just her and I. Mm-hmm. And if you have to get up to go to the bathroom, you go, you put the TV on and hypnotize them and just go, stay right there. I'll be right back. Don't touch anything.
You don't even close the bathroom door all the way.
No way.
Yeah, when I'm babysitting my nephew, who is a six-year-old boy, very rambunctious six-year-old boy, I'm like, Mike, you good?
Yes.
You good out there?
You constantly call out to them.
Yeah. But technically she wasn't babysitting him. She was living with this person. And I feel like when you're actually someone's guardian, it's not, you're not, you know, you and I are terrified of killing our siblings child and don't understand that kids can be left alone a little bit more than we think they can.
Oh, that's true.
So, but then again, that's not, you know, who knows how long she was living with them. So,
but was it only the two of them in the house?
And her younger sister who was visiting.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, man.
I know.
That is.
Yeah. If you guys want to look up, if you look up the Coronado murder house, this fucking mansion is so ugly.
Is it really?
And you can see it's blurred out, and I'm sure you can find one that's not, but her body on the lawn naked. That's so, you know, that they took from the fucking helicopters.
That's an unfortunate porn search that he did that night. If he's innocent.
How is that possible that she's found bound and he looked up, not even just bondage porn,
Asian
bondage porn.
That's not. Yeah, that is quite a... That's too many things to be just a simple coincidence.
Totally.
Oh, man.
And then who was on her computer after 3 a.m.?
Right.
After she's fucking hanging. God damn it. Can you imagine being a neighbor and waking up and seeing that?
Oh, my God.
Fuck.
But he's the one that cut her down. He's the one that found her.
So he, quote, found her. Yeah.
In the morning?
6:30 in the morning.
Then what was time of death? Do you know?
No.
Like, was it supposed to be the night before?
I think it was supposed to be the night before. But what is your first, is your first instinct to cut someone down if they're clearly dead?
It's to run away and call 911.
It's to call 911 in a panic. Not run upstairs, get a knife or whatever, and cut a rope down so this person who's, you could tell when someone's dead and not dead.
Yes.
Then falls to the ground. Especially let's say he has something to do with it, and she's bound. Your first instinct is, this is not a suicide, this is a murder. Why would you then cut them down?
Right. Why would you? Everybody knows that you don't contaminate a crime scene.
Even if you're not like us who are obsessed with this shit, you know not to fucking your fingerprint.
It's Law and Order 101.
Oh, and then there was also a knife in the room that supposedly he cut her down with. No fingerprints on it.
Ooh,
why are
no.
there no fucking fingerprints on that? This is all this very specific stuff, I have to say, is from Reddit, supposedly from the... reports that of the family suing the Shacknows for the murder, for wrongful death. So this could be bullshit.
Well, what's interesting is, like, when I did the looking up all that stuff on the Elisa Lam thing from Cecil Hotel last week, it's most of the information people get ends up being from those wrongful death cases.
Yeah.
Because that's when they release the information and you get it in court records.
Right. The files are open.
Because... When it's a regular police case, you can't get that information.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye. If you're like me, you're always looking for a story to dive into. Whether it's a family drama or a mystery to solve, the key to getting hooked is the details. I need rich visuals and intricate storylines, and June's Journey has that and more. June's Journey is a mobile mystery game that follows June Parker, a daring young woman, on a quest to uncover the truth about her sister's murder. This is your chance to test your detective skills because you'll play the game as June herself. Explore beautifully designed scenes from the 1920s, like lavish estates and gardens, and don't forget to keep an eye out for hidden clues. There are twists, turns, and catchy tunes, all leading you deeper into the thrilling storyline. And if you play well enough, you could make it to the Detective Club. There, you'll chat with other players and compete with or against them. June needs your help, but watch out, you never know which character might be a villain. Shocking family secrets will be revealed, but will you crack the case? Find out as you escape this world and dive into June's world of mystery, murder, and romance. It's all just one tap away. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. That's June's Journey. Download the game for free on iOS and Android. Goodbye.
And yet, so isn't directly. It fucking, this is a thing that's insane to me. That has nothing to do with any of this. The fact that 911 calls are public record.
Yeah.
Is absolutely bananas to me. So you can't get all this information, but you can hear a 911 call just whenever you fucking want.
Yeah.
Those should be so private. I can't even stand it.
Oh, those things bum me out so bad.
I know you can't stand them.
I hate them.
I don't think anyone did you. Oh, there's one where a woman gets killed like on the phone.
No, nope.
There's a whole episode of last podcast on the left where they just do 911 calls.
Oh, I skipped that one.
I know. I was like,
I've listened to every fucking episode. I like look for. I wait for new episodes, but that one.
Yeah. That one. I was like, I listened with my finger hovering over the stop button. Cause I was like, I know. And I never finished it.
Because here's the other, a couple times on like 2020 or like Dateline or whatever. The ones that bum me out the most are those fucking doctors that kill their wives and call 911 pretending to be
upset. I found my wife.
And it's so fake and it's so obvious. It's like if you've taken one acting class, you're like, sir, I'm believing nothing of this right now. And they think they're so smart. They think they are fooling everybody.
You know what we should do? I just thought of how fucking cool this would be.
Make a fake 911 call.
Just do prank calls to 911 for the entire show.
And then get arrested.
And then have the knock at the door of us getting arrested. No, I wouldn't. Okay, this would be ridiculous. But if we played, let's say we had Dustin pick out 10 911 calls. Five of them were real. The person actually had not killed the person.
Right.
Five of them were like... later found out that the person killed the person.
And then it's like a test.
And then we have to guess.
Why do we have to do 10? That's
Let's
so
say
many.
Four. Okay.
That's torture.
How about one of them is fake? Let's do three. Okay.
I honestly feel like I could do it right now and pass the test.
I feel like I'm bartering with you. Okay, three. We'll just do three.
And you, one will be fake.
One will be fake.
But then we have to listen to two real 911
calls. Two will be fake and one will be real.
I think it's because, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this on this, my favorite all-time show is I Survived.
Oh, I don't want to see Survivors. So let's talk about this.
That's okay. The reason I love it is because it's all the, because it's instead of being the thing I'm interested in, which is serial killing and all the crazy shit, which I want distance from and no relation to and no
you
want to
make it
personal
just,
understanding.
Yeah.
And I Survived, it's people that go through all that shit and are sitting, and most of the, it's like literally 90% women. The men are always there because they're like, I survived a hike that went wrong.
Yeah.
Where it's like, fuck you. Pal.
Yeah.
It's always a guy that's like had his own yacht and then he's like, I can't believe
And the
it.
Storm came. Yeah. Like, don't go on a fucking yacht then.
And then there's
shit.
Four women who are like, just this guy came up behind me.
Humans are bigger than most male humans are bigger than I am and can hurt me in broad daylight.
And so unfortunately I had a job.
Right.
And then this man decided I would die for that.
Yep.
But
that's why I don't like it. Cause do you know the show, Cold Case? Oh, what's the one with the two women who, God, my memory is awful.
Is it a real show or is it like a fictional?
It's a real show.
Where they're trying to solve cold cases.
Cold cases. Yeah.
Is it relatively new?
Yeah.
I've never watched it.
Okay. It's called Cold Justice.
Cold Justice.
And these two badass women, one is a prosecutor.
Oh, okay.
And one is a crime scene investigator. And they go to these like fucking tiny towns that have no money for, you know, for detectives and people to look up what's going on and try to solve a cold case.
That's cool.
Oh, it's incredible. And it's like so feminist. I love it. Because these chicks are badass. So they started one called Cold full justice. And then, but it's like, it's only rapes and sexual assaults. Oh. So these women are survived. And it's just so depressing because their interviews like make me hurt, but you don't have to get an interview from the person who's dead.
Right.
So I just, yeah, I don't
Yeah, that's very true. Well, yeah, it's the, I think a key to having this interest is distance.
Yeah.
It's too much to be involved in like the victims' lives, but, and that's normally how I feel, but I Survived is produced so well.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to watch a person who survived and can't tell their own story because they're still so fucked up.
Yeah, that's
that
this
is
show.
Too much to take on. We all have enough problems.
It's also nice too when you're like, when you know that the case has been solved and they've caught the guy and he's in prison, because they're still trying to find the guy who raped them.
That's too much. Yeah, like the stress in their life.
Yeah.
On I Survived, it's all women who most of the time at the very end they're like, and then I started the victims counseling center.
Yes.
There are all these amazing women that like take it, turn it around. There's one girl that like was kidnapped when she was 16 by this crazy serial killer, somehow survived, whatever, and she's a cop.
Fuck yeah.
And it's the everything becomes really amazing and inspirational of like how you can, the worst thing in your life can become like your, basically your destiny.
Does it make you think too that you're more equipped to survive something that like that happens to you because you're never going to be like, well, everyone dies from this. You're going to be like, remember that girl? She fought this guy and she won, and here's how to.
Oh yeah. And once you know that's a fact, a true
that
fact.
That can happen.
Yes. And also they all talk about it. You do whatever it takes to survive. So if you have to play dead, if you have to, you know, like they not justify, but they're like explain like the things that a lot of survivors feel guilty about, which is like, you know, then I got raped for the fourth time.
Yeah, and I didn't fight or something.
Right.
It's like,
where
no,
it's like, no, you don't fight because he would have just slashed your throat.
Yeah. There's a thing I always like, this is my big thing is like, just even if you get stabbed, don't get in the truck, don't get in the car, don't go somewhere with the person. That's right. Like the big thing is like, you're better off getting shot on the street than not getting shot and getting in the car of the person who's trying to, like, do whatever you fucking can, even if it's getting stabbed, to not get in the car.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you're in their possession, you're fucked.
Yes. It's a good thing to know in your head.
Right.
But in the situation comes up, who the fuck knows?
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
It's so crazy. Because also you go into shock. I mean, there's
totally
a lot of people that tell the story where you're just kind of like, it all is so surreal that you feel like you're dreaming.
Yeah.
Like, you, how could this actually be happening?
Allie has this crazy story that she was just walking down the street in like Larchmont, which is like a nice fucking neighborhood, during the day. This car pulls up. These two like gangster dudes get out with fucking kitchen knives, big old chef's knives, and are like, give us your money. And she takes her purse like a football, throws it in the opposite direction, like to the side, and then runs back the way she was going, which is like,
that's genius.
The thought that you could even do that while you're getting held up and like understand that if you throw your purse off to the side, they're going to go after the purse, not you.
Yes. Genius. How did she know to do that?
She said it was just instinct.
Fucking crazy.
Well, her dad was also a crime reporter when she was a kid, so I bet something like that has happened and she's heard about it.
He's probably like been like, oh, and by the by, now that we're sitting here at breakfast,
should she ever this.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
the closest that I can even slightly think of like anything like this that's happened to me is I was walking down La Brea one time and there's a bank that had a weird like inside parking lot where you drove in under like a little bank overpass and then there was just like an interior parking lot.
Creepy.
And it was Saturday afternoon, so like the bank was closed. And as I was walking by, I hear like, hey, excuse me, excuse me, hey. And there's a guy sitting in like a station wagon. He's like, pardon me, can I just ask you a quick question?
Nope.
And I'm walking by and I just started laughing. I was like, no. And I like was still walking. He's like, ma'am, I just need to ask you this question. Like, I'm supposed to walk in this thing.
Yes, sir.
And then he, I just was like hurried it up. And then he's like, man, people are so untrusting. It's like, why the fuck aren't you out here on the sidewalk if you have such a pressing question?
Yeah. And you saying untrusting means you're clearly untrustworthy. Why would I trust you?
Yes. Why are you bringing that up at all? And also, what kind of idiot has to go? I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but it was so
you know
overtly
why?
Dangerous.
It's because we're bitches and we don't have to be fucking polite to other people.
Yes.
Which is like such a gift.
That's right. I was raised by a bitch who was like, would to a person's face be like, why don't you get back the fuck up right now?
My mom too.
Yeah.
My mom got, someone copped a feel on my mom in broad daylight when she was a kid and she told me about it. When I was a fucking kid, which probably shouldn't have. So like, I've always been
fucking terrified of strangers. Yeah. That happened to me too. Yeah, great. That happened to me too. I like a few years ago, I was leaving a bar and some guy kind of seemed like he was following me, and I was like getting into my car and he was like, "Hey, hey," and like running towards me, and I get in my car in front of him and lock the door. And he was like, "Never mind," and like walked away. And he was like clearly a creep. He wasn't someone that was like a friend, you know?
Yeah, but like the tone, I'm sure the tone of his voice was like, "Yes, what do you need?
Yeah.
What kind of fun experience will this be?"
Right.
Crazy. Also, that just made me think, sorry, now we're doing this.
No, this is, I love it.
It just made me think of this when I was dumb, and I think I was probably 21 or 22. I lived in San Francisco, and we all went to see, my friend Maleva lived with a band.
Of
it
course.
Was so hilarious in this Victorian house.
Amazing.
On Viennese. They were the coolest guys. They were so nice. And it was like a total like Dave Matthews-y style band.
Mm-hmm.
And they were playing at a bar nearby. So me and her and my other friend all went to watch the band in this little bar. We all got drunk.
What bar?
It was I think it was the King's Head.
Mm-hmm. The pub.
Yes.
Next door is the best sausages I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Wait, I think that's it.
Yeah.
No, that's Tornado.
Off of Lombard.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of something else, but I know the King's Head. That's great.
Okay. So it was like, it just felt like a regular night going out like we had done a million times. And we were all dancing on the dance floor and having a great time. And this guy came up and he was really cute. He looked, on first impression, he looked like he had just gotten out of the army to me. He was very clean cut and kind of intense. But he came and started dancing next to me and talking to me. And
like almost like your friends, or like you must have friends in common or something. Like he knows who you are.
Yeah. And also, but it was like the feel of it was like almost like a jam band, like, oh, we're all here together. And so he was like, "Hey, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Hey, let's dance together." And I was like, "Yeah, like we already were."
Yeah.
Like we all were dancing. Yeah. Everyone was dancing. And then he goes, let's go over here. And I go, "No." And I looked around. My friends were nowhere near me. I didn't realize it because I was drunk.
Yeah.
But they weren't nearby. And I was like, "No." And then he grabbed both of my hands at the same time by the wrists.
No.
And he goes, "Let's go over here." And was pulling me toward the fucking door.
No.
And this guy, Dave, who was the greatest, was the manager of the band. And he also lived in the house with everybody.
Uh-huh.
And out of nowhere, Dave fucking shows up, grabs the guy by the shirt, and just pulls him away.
Holy
and the guy
shit.
Got kicked out by security. Thank fucking God Dave was watching the entire time.
Do you know that happened over the weekend and Jesse Pop fucking kicked this guy out of a bar?
What?
I just remember that.
Whoa, yes.
Sorry.
This is the best.
Dustin, is this going way too long? Is this okay? Okay. There was this fucking guy in a bar. We get to the drawing room, which is like this dive bar everyone loves. Like the bartender knows us. It's the best. And I'm getting drinks and this guy next to me is like being friendly and I'm being friendly back because everyone there is a regular. And then he suddenly turns and says something about Vince, my husband, that's rude. And so I just stopped paying attention to him. And I think he said something shitty and Vince was like, "Gotta want to fight him," kind of, which Vince doesn't do.
Yeah.
And then so Allie and I are talking to a friend and this guy who's like drunk as fuck comes over and starts talking to us. And Jesse Pop walks over and goes, "This guy bothering you?" And I go, "Yeah, actually he is." And Jesse goes, "All right, bub, come on. Leave the ladies alone. You got to get out of here." And the guy was like kind of pissed and like yelling at him. And then the bartender came over and kicked him out. But it was straight up, "This guy bothering you?" Yeah. Okay.
Are my cheeks red right now?
Yes.
It's my favorite thing I've ever heard.
It was amazing.
That is.
Dustin was there. Dustin
the
saw
best.
It. Yeah. Oh my God.
You know what? Fuck yeah to tall guys that take care of business.
Yep. Short guys too.
Well, yes, exactly. Any guys, actually.
Right.
Fuck yeah to guys that step up, pay attention, because things like that, especially, it's like you can't even drink as
That's
a
what
woman.
I was going to say is like you can't have two drinks because you're inebriated.
And suddenly you're kind of like, I want to hang out and chat with people and give people a chance. And literally like my story, the turn happened so quickly.
Yeah.
I remember in my head thinking, "You fucking idiot."
Not like, enough time to react.
No time to react. And like, he had me.
Overpowered you.
If that guy wasn't paying attention, I would have been out the side door. No one would have seen me go.
No. Nope.
It was the perfect scenario.
I wonder if you'd recognize him. He had to have gone on to fucking be a rapist, at least.
I don't know.
Jesus.
I mean,
isn't that weird that could, he could have gone on to do that and you wouldn't know?
Yeah.
That how you escaped that same
Well,
person.
Also, think that later on when we all got on the bus together, It's such a dumb, like, part of my life where we were like, we lived with a band. Yeah. I mean, like, she did, but then I was always there with
them. No, it's adorable. It's what you do in your 20s.
Yeah, exactly. But, they all knew it happened. And I felt, I was ashamed. Like, oh my God. Was me. But they were like, hey, are you okay? And, like, yeah. They were all kind of checking in where I was like, I wanted to be a city girl.
Yeah.
And there's that problem, too. When you want to be a tough city girl that knows her shit and parties and this and that.
Or you're one of the guys. And then suddenly this person does this thing to show that you are just a fucking girl.
Yeah.
Who can pretty much be overpowered by the smallest guy in the group.
Yeah. And you're just kind of a dumb weakling. Yeah. That, like, didn't. Oh.
It's, I think that we like to be tough. And then someone proves that you're not, or like when you want to be tough and then someone makes you cry and you're so pissed off at yourself for crying because it makes you look like a pussy.
Yeah.
That's so annoying.
Yeah. Oh man.
Hey,
come on.
I love how on the show we're just so like, everything is the worst and fuck everything. And you got to be on your guard. Maybe, maybe we'll save someone's life.
Yes, exactly. And also just, you got to be a survivor. Yeah. That's the point.
Listen, have a buddy. Don't ever be alone at a bar.
No,
and
man.
Don't be drunk alone.
Don't leave your drink alone. Yeah. If you're going to get drunk, which hell yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
But you have to have maybe either one sober friend.
Yeah.
A friend that drinks slower than you.
Yeah.
Or just someone that's got their eye out.
Yeah. And don't leave the bar to go home with someone and leave your girlfriend behind. Don't fucking let your girlfriend leave you behind. I mean, don't be stupid is basically.
I know.
Oh man, you look so worried right now. You look like you're solving a.
You know what it is? I'm just thinking about the fact that I was a blackout drunk for 15 years of my life, and for some reason I'm fine. What? I somehow survived.
I don't know how. It's the thing that I think happens in every episode where we're like, "How are we not dead?"
I know. You know what? We're all okay.
We're so okay. And hopefully, hopefully this podcast will lower our, just on its merit alone, will lower our percentage, because we've talked about it. So the likelihood of it happening is less, right? Is that a thing?
I've heard you say that now 8 times because there's been 8 episodes. It's now like your magic mantra.
It is. If you can imagine something happening, the likelihood decreases that it'll happen.
Well, because you're running scenarios. You're being smart.
Exactly.
You're being smart.
Exactly.
Are we going to listen to Vince's story?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now
so
that we kind of have the...
said husband, Vince, left me. Has had a murder story that he told me in the very beginning because he knows that I'm obsessed, even though he's not. But then he told me this murder story and I was like... I tried not to react, so I was in love with it because I didn't want him to think I was a weirdo. But it's really good.
It's a good one.
Okay, sorry.
Vince Averill, ladies and gentlemen.
Averill.
Oh, did I tell you that story that the DJ asked me how to pronounce Vince's name?
He did.
He leaned over and he goes, wait, how do you pronounce his last name? And I go, it's Averill. And then I sat there for 3 seconds and it was like he was about to say it. And then I leaned over really quick and asked Matt or whoever was next to me that knew. And then I'm like, Averill.
Well, did you hear? Yeah, but then did you hear when he introduced us? He was like, hard start.
And that was me. The pause in between, I go, hard start, really fast. I was sitting directly next to the DJ.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Here's
but I almost fucked up Vincent.
I love it. It all turned out okay.
I grew up in a small town outside Detroit, Michigan, and we had a Central Park in town. And when I was like a freshman or sophomore in high school, a girl who was in my class was abducted out of the park and ultimately raped and murdered by a guy who was like a serial killer. It turned out he'd done it to a number of women. And then a few years later, the year after I graduated, there were 2 12-year-old girls who met these guys, a 20 and a 30-year-old in the park, and had asked them to buy them alcohol so they could celebrate their 13th birthdays that were coming up. So the guys told them to come back and meet them there that night, and they would have the alcohol for them. So when these girls snuck out and came back, and the guys got them drunk, raped, killed them, pretty horrible stuff, and then they put the bodies in the river, in the drain. And then shortly thereafter was the summer festival that happened every year. And during the festival, which was a lot of it taking place in Central Park, the girls' bodies were discovered. They came up and I don't know.
Jesus, Vince.
So, like, all the families are at the festival, yep. and the fucking bodies float up in the river.
Yep. And they thought the girls were runaways until then, I think. Oh. Also, did you see my cat? Like, as soon as Vince's voice came on, he ran over. I was aww. Like, well, what the fuck? Where are my treats? Yeah, that's a fucked up.
Oh, my God.
I know.
12. Wait.
No.
The girls
were like, I think 13 or 14.
No,
they were 12. Yeah, you're right.
They're celebrating their 13th birthday.
But I went to rehab when I was 13. Like, they were probably bad kids,
Georgia.
Too. I know.
You never know it from your wonderful dresses and
thank
your
you.
Collections of wonderful things.
Thank you.
And your gorgeous spa water. Georgia served us delicious cucumber water like a fucking rich lady.
Oh, there's meth in it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's fucked up. Yeah. That like I was in those scenarios drinking booze with like 20 something year olds.
Stay out of the park.
And in a park at night.
Oh,
just the only difference is I didn't get raped and murdered.
Yep. Come on.
Jesus Christ.
Congratulations.
Do you want to read Hometown Murder or are you done?
Should we save it for next week?
Maybe we're emotionally.
I'm wrung out.
We're emotionally exhausted.
I love it.
This murder podcast has murdered us.
It's really going to get us to a new place.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that thing that happened to me till just now. I swear to God.
This is bringing up shit and we're probably going to need to talk to therapists about it.
Yeah.
Is there something positive we can talk about? Did you ever?
I just snorted like snot in my nose like a fucking third grader.
No, I love it. You're sick. It's okay.
They can go on to other podcasts for positive shit.
That's
there's
true.
Like all kinds.
Here, let me. Elvis, do you want a cookie?
Want a cookie?
Okay. That's the positive. That's okay. Oh. Elvis, a cookie?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening, you guys. I'm sorry if this is, but please tell us everything. You can email us at myfavoritemurder@gmail.com. Please get onto the Facebook page, My Favorite Murder Group. It's private, so people won't be able to read your crazy shit that you write. And it's like such a fun fucking group.
And then on Twitter, we're MyFaveMurder.
Yeah, please follow us. And then go on iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe. Have you been reading our reviews? I haven't. We should see if we have any.
I did once, and I told the story of how I fixated on the two bad ones
right.
and didn't even pay attention to the hundreds of good ones.
That's how life is.
I know.
We shouldn't do that. Shame us for doing that. thanks.
We love you.
We love you.
Stay sexy.